Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm your host, Ray Graff. It's the October edition of our gardening show today, and we welcome back Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. The number to call here on this program is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or if you wish, you may email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. There should be a Vox Pop post there. You can comment there. Tweet us if you want, @WAMCVoxPop. But again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. These shows tend to be very well trafficked, so get in early while there's still a line or two open. And we welcome back Bob, Greg, and Fred. Hi, guys. How you doing?
Very well.
Yep,
how are you?
Doing well.
All right. So it's almost the end of the peak season for you guys?
Yeah, it's definitely winding down. Still very good planting time. You probably can get some deals out there if you find a few things. The weather is actually good for that.
Excellent.
Like planting.
All right, you brought me garlic.
And
you've explained before the show how to do it.
Yep.
By the end of the show, I'll have to ask again how to do it.
But anytime.
We'll give it a shot, man.
Yep.
I'm very pleased to see that we got some rain, too.
Yep.
Plenty of
it last night. Wow.
It's going to really help rehydrate those things that were dry over the course of the season.
Yeah. It's really the best thing to happen is to get everything nice and hydrated before it gets cold.
Yep.
And the roots are still actively moving. So a lot of people think, the leaves are falling off.
Yeah, everybody thinks
they're done now.
But there's a lot of root activity still going on.
That's right. And in fact, it's a good time to start fertilizing. A lot of people fertilize too early in the fall, and that's naturally not recommended. But this time of year, it's perfect. The roots are still gathering. I hear the forecast is looking like some, relatively non-freezing temperatures, some warmer temperatures.
Nice. Yeah, so it's
even
continue.
Better.
Fall fertilization is really defined by temperature, not by product.
That is,
anything
you
use late is a fall fertilizer.
Well, we did have one or two very cold nights, and that won't affect the timetable at all. We were in the 20s.
No, because they're going to wake right back up. They didn't shut down.
It's the consistency.
And it actually was what we were looking for. I mean, it was maybe 22 was a little cold, but what we want is for everything to sort of drop its leaves or shut down its needles so that it can really concentrate on rooting.
Get all that energy stored.
Yeah, it's all about storage because it needs to leaf out through stored energy. So the more we can get it good into winter going in storage,
stronger
the better
we
it's going to pop out in the spring.
Okay, we have a lot of calls here, so let's get right to them. Jeff in Amsterdam. Jeff, you're on.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay, so I have some highbush cranberry, Viburnum trilobum.
Yep.
Planted them probably 35 years ago. They've always sort of struggled, but I did get some reseeding of them and stuff like that. But I am now down to two, and finally I noticed this year in May that they were being defoliated by a little sort of gray wormish kind of thing.
It's the Viburnum leaf beetle larva.
It's very destructive on those.
Yep, it is. That's the worst pest that we've had with them. And that's what's going on with your decline. It's this insect called the Viburnum leaf beetle. The worst part about the beetle is the timing. The timing of this guy is really bad because leaves, we were just talking about things, how they leaf out in the spring from stored energy.
Right.
Well, right when they leaf out, now you've got this little larva, this little worm of sorts, eating leaves. And I could tell people, if the Viburnum leaf beetle larva doesn't get you, then the Viburnum beetle comes back, and then it also continues to feed.
It's rare that the same insect eats a tree or plant twice.
Yeah, it is.
And it's actually...
And that's what makes that one bad.
It's even
more because it's a short life cycle. Well, yeah, I noticed that the foliage came back, as it has in the past, but then it got
eaten again.
Yep, and it's wearing it out, energy-wise, is wearing it down. And if it did it in the fall, it wouldn't be a big problem.
Greg, but we're not really selling a lot of the certain types of Viburnum anymore. Because some are susceptible and some aren't.
The Viburnum dentatum, Arrowwood Viburnum, Viburnum trilobum, as the gentleman mentioned, both of those are susceptible.
Very susceptible. Opulus,
Viburnum carcinoides somewhat. What we're finding, though, in the Berkshires, I have to say, is that we had this infestation probably 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the Arrowwood Viburnums, exactly as this gentleman described, slow decline. They're gone. The trilobums, never really dying out completely, but looking terrible. And so I am surprised to hear that his trilobums are failing because of that. Would be interesting to study. But that said, if I could say one more thing, is that the we're actually seeing the dentatums in many areas that were actually they're getting stronger. The beetle's still there, but they're starting to flower again. They're starting to fruit again, so that Something is happening. Something is interrupting the
often when you get a massive increase in an insect population or any organism, there'll be something that comes along that goes after it, a fungus, a predator, something else that begins to control
Or they'll
it.
Deplete their food source and they end up in a dieback situation on their own, weakened, and then weaken their own condition.
But, you can treat those plants that you have for that viburnum leaf beetle, or you may just decide to do something else.
Organically, that spinosad product is very effective. Yep. But as we said, you have to treat it multiple times throughout the year for that to be effective.
Correct.
All right, let's go over to Maris in Clifton Park. Maris, you're on.
Hi there. I've got a couple of 3 or 4 year old endless summer hydrangeas, and I've read all of the old wood, new wood stuff. But this, these three have been hit really hard by frost and are looking terrible. So can I cut these down, or do I leave them alone and let them grow off the old wood next season?
Well, if you want flowers, you should leave them alone, or at least, you know, don't cut them too far.
Now, there's a lot of different thoughts on this, too, because my endless summers last winter, I did not trim them in the fall, and they died completely to the ground. No. They were gone. And they came back this year, but they didn't flower until very late in the season.
Same with mine.
And what we're reading about now is they're starting to say you need to fertilize those a lot more than we thought we did. So I'd fertilize them now and maybe several times in the spring to push that growth a little taller, a little sooner. But it's a weather-related issue.
Yep. Sometimes wrapping our burlap around them as well to insulate them through the winter can help overwinter some of those flower buds. Sometimes they're marginal flower buds. They'll die back due to the winter injury.
Yeah, so those spring flowers, which would be your May or really June flowers, really will have to come off of the wood. And so that's why you don't want to prune it. But the flower buds may not, the wood may not make it until June. It may get too cold. They may dry out. So if you can winter protect the wood, burlap, also adding compost around the base and actually burying the crown of the plant to save at least, you know, 4 or 5 inches of that wood can make a big difference.
Yep. And I always recommend waiting until spring to see what actually dies back because like you guys had said, yours died right to the ground.
But
that doesn't
do you a lot of good to
trim
it now because you might have a mild winter or a lot of snow.
Exactly. You might have most of that plant. I mean, you wouldn't normally want to cut that back to the ground unless it died back.
Okay.
And then if you think of butterfly bush, a lot of people understand butterfly bush. I kind of look at those as butterfly bush in terms of how I would prune them. Wait to see how far back it dies back and then cut it a little bit beyond that. Butterfly bush in a warm zone will get 6-8 feet tall, and it doesn't even die back. But around here, usually right to the ground.
Right to the ground.
And same thing for the Pinky Winkies, or they don't care?
Pinky Winkies, a panicle hydrangea. Still better to wait until spring to prune it, but it blooms on new wood, so it's not an issue.
Yeah.
It's not really an issue if you prune it now or in spring. However, we would still recommend spring.
There's a big difference between the macrophyllotypes and the paniculatus in terms of pruning.
That's right.
Yes. Yes, my concern with not pruning them a little bit now is if they were to get, you know, covered with snow and ice and, you know, break in all the wrong places. So
You can trim them if you want, but you don't necessarily have to.
Removing those flower heads is helpful.
Maybe to spend flowers, exactly.
Okay.
Try to reduce some of the weight.
Great. And bouncing off the viburnum question, since I'm looking at mine, the Shasta viburnum also in that same category with being affected by those bugs?
No.
I don't think so. No,
not at all.
Nope. There's a lot of good ones. There's the two. The number one on the list is probably the arrowwood, which got hit the hardest.
The general rule of thumb is if they're a smooth leaf, they're more effective than if they're a leaf that has some texture to it.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. Maris, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. Did you see it? Did he just say Pinky Winky?
Pinky Winky.
Yeah.
So Teletubby character, right? What the heck is going on here?
A lot of different hydrangea names.
Yeah.
Strawberry, and we got a bunch of them.
All right, we only have about a minute and a half till our next break, but let's go to Hugh in Lake Luzerne. Hugh, you're on.
Well, thank you very much. I've got some lilac I tend, and they're sprawling. We have a shady lot. I don't know if I should prune them back if they're just reaching out photo-wise to capture the available sun, and I also wanted to know about seasonal fertilization.
All right.
Well, first off, I would not prune them now. The time to prune lilacs is immediately after blooming. So typically right after they bloom, it's like the hydrangeas, at least the one group, which sets up flower buds on older wood. And lilacs are in that group. They set up flower buds literally right after they get done blooming. They put energy to seed. They put energy to making new flower buds. Mm. Take the seeds off after they're, people say, should I deadhead them? Should I take the flowers off? Yes, you should. The reason why is because a lot of the energy that goes to seed production goes right to flower bud production, meaning more flowers, more for
but
you.
But if you've got lilacs in the shade, they're not going to do particularly well
but
for you.
But they're never going to do that
anyway.
Nope. And then if they're really overgrown, there is a rejuvenation pruning that can occur, and that timing is a little bit different. That would be spring prior to the actual buds opening. So if you needed, you know, really tall, I don't have a lot of options. I kind of, you know, it's either take it down or replant. Then you could rejuvenate that plant. You will get a brand new shrub out of that in one season.
Hugh, thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a break here. It's The Gardening Show on WAMC, 1-800-348-2551. The number. We'll be back.
Support comes from Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy, interimhealthcare.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley, we conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. The 1850 House and Tavern, a historic boutique bed and breakfast on the banks of the Rondout River for weekend getaways, retreats, and weddings, Main Street, Rosendale, New York. The1850house.com. And Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, locally owned and operated for over 52 years with indoor and outdoor plants, gardening supplies, bird feeders and seeds, organic fertilizer, and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's The Gardening Show. Ray Graff here, along with Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia. You join in as well by calling 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop, or even go to Facebook, WAMC Radio. You'll see a Vox Pop post there. But back to the phones we go. And Carrie in Plainfield, Mass. Carrie, you're on.
All right, quick garlic question. Okay. I have my garlic in its raised beds, and every year I insulate the garlic and I put layers of straw and or pine needles over them. Now, I have lots of leaves, and I have a few black plastic bags, and I was wondering if I put those leaves in plastic bags, is that advisable to put that over the garlic, or for some reason would the plastic bags not be the best thing to do?
I don't think I'd want the plastic touching the garlic because the garlic.
No, it's not going to touch the garlic because the garlic's like 3 inches inside the soil.
Right, but they're going to pop up this month.
Yeah, okay.
They're going to probably show up because we're not going to, like we just said, we're not going to have a lot of cold weather in the next 10 days. And if you put them in, you know, 10 days ago, they're probably going to pop up. So I wouldn't want the plastic to be there kind of stifling the foliage. I think just laying those leaves loosely over the bed would be fine.
Okay.
Maybe putting the bags around the edge of the...
Yeah, I'd be more concerned about insulating the edge of the beds because you're going to get cold infiltration from the sides.
Definitely. It's like a sills of a house. You want to kind of insulate those sills. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what you do with the floor.
Yeah. I usually plant, and whether it sprouts or not, I add some kind of mulch material, some leaves or some straw, something over the bed.
Pine needles are okay, too?
You know, pine needles, you want to get them out of there afterwards.
Yeah, I do. I use the leaf blower. I get everything out of there.
Yeah, the one thing about pine needles is it does tend to acidify, and that may not be a bad thing. That could be a good thing, but...
You don't
always
know.
Taking that soil test if you haven't gotten that far. I recommend people just spend $12, go to at least in New York, go to the local cooperative extension in New York and spend $12 and get the complete pH and fertility test for like $12-13. You can't go wrong, and then you're going to know, because pine needles, I've seen people get into problems with them because of pH, but otherwise they work well, and I like pine needles, and they could be working to your advantage. Otherwise, straw.
And I did the leaves. I would mow them up first so that they're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Carrie. 1-800-348-2551. Vincent in Poughkeepsie. Vincent, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I've been an organic gardener for like 35 years, and it seems like every year there's a new battle of a new weed or a new bug that I have to fight. And lately I've noticed I used to be pigweed was one of my really big problems, and it's totally gone.
and Jimson, I think it's called, and Foxtail have moved in.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Not so much the Foxtail, but the Jimson about, you know, it's the devil's weed, I think they call it, and loco weed.
Loco weed, yeah.
Loco weed, yeah, because you don't want to
You don't want to work with that. It's bad
stuff. Yeah, you don't want to play with that. But anyway, is it could it be somehow poisoning my ground because my yields haven't been as good as in the past?
No, I don't think it would poison the ground. The one thing is that weeds have an amazing effect at reducing yields. If they're just a like one weed next to a tomato plant will affect the yield. 20 weeds right next to that plant is going to do a huge thing. So if you're having a sort of an outbreak with a lot of weeds, it is going to definitely weeds are better at pulling in nutrients and water.
I've had pretty good luck with controlling those just by pulling them.
Hand-weeding
them. You have to keep after
them. Yeah, but what happened was I had an illness. And the garden kind of went to seed, and they really invaded.
Oh,
but it was just amazing how the pigweed has vanished, which I used to feed to my turkeys. They loved it. And this has just totally taken over.
So,
but is
so
that
are you,
poisoning the ground in any sense?
Are you tilling the soil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Usually. So, well, yes and no. Yeah, but mostly.
So the tilling is going to always be allowing for the new weed seeds to show up. And so
right.
if you sort of limit that a little bit, or as we were talking about with the garlic earlier, mulching, you know, once you plant, if you you get out there, of course, some things you want to get up and sizable, some things you want the ground to be a little warmer. But eventually by June, you know, or 1st of July, if you're mulching in between these plants, you shouldn't have as serious a weed problem.
Yeah, the fact that I wasn't getting out there, because I have people deliver me these long guys, deliver me wood chips by the truckload and leaves by the truckload. So I have plenty of mulch.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
of course,
I was just concerned.
Whenever you use wood, you're robbing nitrogen from the soil,
now,
too.
I realize that, but the wood chips are broken down to almost looking like soil.
Now your foxtail or horsetail is a harder one to control. That's best if you can keep to mow it down or weed whack it down. Pulling actually it makes that worse sometimes.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Because
you'll never see it in the lawn. You know, if you mow something every week, it doesn't show up.
Right. It is tenacious though.
Well, it is. On a good side, it's got a lot of herbal uses.
Oh yeah.
So, I know they do. If you Google that, you'll come up with all kinds of stuff for horsetail. Yep. Everything from teas and so forth and so on. It's got a lot of nutrients.
Yeah, that's another show. Vincent, thanks a lot for the call. Over to Margaret in Highland. Margaret.
Oh yes. Hello. I was just wondering about if it's a good time to put grub killer down.
In general, not right now.
It's too late for grub killer.
Too late. So when should you do it?
What kind of grub killer are you using, like a chemical type product, or more like a milky spore, like a bacterial type, a more natural environment, organic?
I haven't really used anything, but I did have some nasty Japanese beetles, so I'm trying to get ahead of them for next year.
All right, what I would recommend is wait till the spring, and then I would definitely recommend not going a chemical route, because that kills all kinds of stuff, and you don't really want that in your soil. So I would recommend looking up milky spore disease. It's actually a disease to the Japanese beetle grub. It's specific to the Japanese beetle grub. And the great thing about this is that it takes a few years to get up a good level of control. But once it's in your property and once it's on your lawn and in your soil, it's a sustainable ecosystem. It just continues to work. And
the only thing you want to recognize with that is, as he said, it's just Japanese beetles. If you've got a lot of European chafers or some other kind of grub in there, it will not control them.
Right, but it'll take, and probably Japanese beetle is your worst enemy.
Probably the main one.
Yep, and that'll take care of all of those. And like I said, it's nothing that you have to reapply, which is the great thing.
Oh, that is great.
So, and it's environmentally friendly, it's organic, and win-win-win, and it'll be a spring application when soil temperature warms up.
All right, Margaret, thanks a lot. Here are a couple that came in via email. This one's from Ron, who says, I've converted a portion of lawn to field about 5 years ago, planted a number of flowers, shrubs, etc. The field has been taken over by goldenrod at the expense of everything else. Help! !
Well, you know, gardening is something that is a creation. It's ongoing. If you're going to put woody plants in there, then you need to allow them to persist and kind of beat back the other things. So, you know, goldenrod is going to jump in there if you don't mow at all.
It's either mow it or, you know, what you do with a hayfield is every now and then you plow it up and replant it if you're looking for a true meadow effect.
Right. And if you're trying to have woody ornamentals in the goldenrod, you need to create open islands around those woody plants that the goldenrod will not be able to grow in.
Mm. Okay. This one's from Rogerio. When is the right time to prune rose bushes?
Depends on the type of roses a little bit.
But yeah,
most roses that we'll talk about will bloom on new wood. So they're going to bloom on the new growth that comes out in May and June and flower in usually mid-June for us. And so all of those roses can be pruned in the spring, as we've been saying.
Prior to bud break.
Yeah, we don't want to do any pruning in the fall. We want to leave everything intact, and we'll do the pruning. So usually for us, we're suggesting somewhere around the second, third week of April as the beginning, trying to get it done before the middle of May.
Okay, before they actually leaf out, and kind of like apples, similar to apples, but are a little bit later.
If for some reason it's a old wood blooming rose, which there are very few, if it's large and substantial, then it's usually not pruned, or it's pruned after the bloom.
Or if it's a climber, you would not prune it heavily.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, let's go back to the phones at 1-800-348-2551. Scott in Hudson. Scott, you're up.
Hi, thank you for having me, taking my call. I have a question about horseradish. At some point in the summer of 2014, I transplanted some horseradish that I stole from my grandparents' yard. And it's been doing great all of this summer. Most of the reading I've come across on the internet suggests right about now, when there's been some cold nights that we've had, is the best time to harvest that. But I've also seen some arguments suggesting early spring, when the days are getting warm but the nights are still very cold, is a better time to harvest it, because you get that bite that you want from horseradish, but it also then has the rest of the summer to work on its root system. I'm wondering what you guys think about that.
I think that in terms of harming the horseradish, it doesn't matter. That you could dig it up, divide out the roots, take what you want and to make the horseradish now and replant the roots, and everything would be fine. And that would also be true in the spring. But you do, I think, get a little better flavor in the spring, and that's when I have usually done it.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'll follow your advice. That's what I was sort of planning on doing
The roots themselves, very hardy. Just you get them back in the ground, they're not going to skip a beat.
And my soil is almost pure clay. Would that have any effect on it? I'm a little surprised that they seem to have grown as well as they did this summer, because the soil can get almost solid with the clay quality that it is.
Well, while you're digging them up, or if you want to just put it on the calendar for spring, one, you dig up everything, you could certainly break up that garden area some more. You could add some compost to that area. Compost is one of the most available, easiest things to apply. If you did that every year that you harvested the horseradish, then the soil quality will get better.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you very much.
Scott, thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia are here. Beth, you're there in Montgomery. You're on.
Hello, Beth.
Yes. I see. All right. Karen in Buckland, you're on. Karen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a garden that's been taken over by ferns and woodnut, all the plants that propagate, with underground root. And I want to dig it up and get rid of it all and start fresh. And you were talking about roots being active in the fall.
Yep.
So I'm wondering, what's the best time to do that, the fall or the spring, maybe when the roots are not as active?
Well, personally, and I'm sure these other guys may have some other insights into this, but there's two sort of schools of thought with gardens nowadays. The main two things is that there's a till and there's a no-till sort of school. The old school is more of, we've always tilled the gardens and it works, and if it's not broke, don't fix it. Yeah, the newer way of thinking is that actually creates more work for a lot of people. In particular, weed seeds are brought up from the bottom. And then also when you till, there's a whole network of piping, if you want to think of it that way, capillaries of that bring both water and air into the soil profile where it's needed. And when you till, you break up all the plumbing and electrical, if you want to think of it, of the soil, the functioning capacity to move material, air and water. So my suggestion would always be to smother it with something that, and I like, some people will say black plastic because it certainly does work, but I like something more like a heavy-duty industrial weed fabric, and it's only temporary. The reason why I like the barrier is because it lets water and air in, and the plastic keeps that part out. But maybe that works to an advantage as well.
It is.
You smother it, and then you can literally plant in the spring. So you put that plastic or weed barrier down now, and then in the spring it's going to be more than smothered and everything in there. When everything else turns green, you take it off, and You've got a dead zone that's very easily plantable.
And it's sort of I do think it does depend on what it is you're trying to plant there. What is it you want to change it to?
Well, I want to get rid of the ferns that have taken over and maybe put some shrubs. I have some bulbs in there that show up early in the spring, but then they get completely taken over by the ferns. So are you suggesting to weed whack the ferns down, cover with this barrier, and then you kind of leave the root system intact?
I think if you're concerned with bulbs or any other herbaceous plant in there, you do have to be careful about covering up everything because those bulbs are going to
you'll take
to come
those
through.
As well.
I could dig those out. I'm not worried about the bulbs. I'm just trying to figure out how to get rid of all the ferns.
So Fred's example would be the simplest way to get rid of everything. That said, a much more energetic way would be to dig up everything now.
Depends a little bit on your time frame, too. If you got to do it fairly quickly, then you need to dig it up and clean it out. And if you've got some time, then you can take the other route.
Yeah, the other route, which is the smothering, it would not be something that you're going to get control of until the spring. You could put it down now. You could even do it early spring.
And
but
some things, they go right through some of these barriers, too. I've seen stuff go through blacktop sometimes. Yeah.
If you're really going to want to make this into sort of a new garden, lifting the bulbs now, digging up everything, removing as much root material as you possibly can, and then covering for the winter and to just sort of stifle any little pieces that are left over, and then in the spring see
kind
what
of hedge
you have.
Your bets and do both.
Yeah.
I'm just afraid if I smother the roots with black plastic that I'll get ferns again next year.
You might.
Ferns are pretty tough,
it can be persistent.
And covering them now, there's not a lot of time for them to grow, so it's possible they'd still be alive in the spring. But if you didn't uncover it until mid-May or something, you probably would have done it.
Yeah, but you still might get them because spores of ferns will drop into the soil, and spores can last a lot longer than seeds. So you don't be surprised if next thing 4 or 5 months later you start to see little ferns come up again.
It's going to
be kind of maintenance hand weeding and go after. But then you'll be able to at least have control.
One quick thing is if it's just going to be a shrub bed and you lift the bulbs out, you could mulch with cardboard and then a mulching material on top of that cardboard. So and just plant the shrubs that you have in mind. Now
right
or in the spring, work the cardboard around them over the ferns that you're trying to stifle, mulch again, and that is actually very effective. So for woody plant installation only, it's a really easy way to deal with it.
It is.
But those herbaceous things, you'll have to wait until the cardboard breaks down and everything's dissipated before you can start putting those back in.
Karen, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, what's wrong with ferns? They're a nice green. They look good.
Nothing.
They can be pretty invasive, though.
Absolutely nothing. I love ferns.
I mean, they're one of the original plants, right? They go back millions and millions of years.
It comes right down to anything that is growing in a spot where you don't want it is the definition of a weed. It could be a problem. It could be an apple tree that's a weed.
Absolutely.
But typically ferns are quite nice.
All right, let's go to Deborah, arriving through Ulster County, it says. I'm not sure what that means. Wherever you are, Deborah, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. The first one is about butterfly bushes, and is this the best time for me to cut them back?
No. Nope. You want to wait till springtime, and you want to see how far down that branch is dead in the spring, and then make it cut back into the live wood. And you definitely don't want to cut them this time of year. I'd definitely wait till spring. Sometimes you get lucky, and they'll insulate out, and you'll actually have more than a foot or so of butterfly bush left, but a lot of times it'll die back to the ground. But either way, let it sit where it is and let it go through winter and then cut it back in the spring.
And in general, woody plants should not be pruned until the spring.
Yep.
Non-woody plants could be pruned, and so your black-eyed Susies and your coneflowers could all be cut down now. Even your grasses could be cut down now. A couple of woody perennials like lavender and Russian sage, those you would also leave intact, or for the most part intact.
Yeah, a lot of the woody plants are all going to be using that material storage. So by taking it away now, you're literally taking away some of the storage. And if you take away some of the storage, then it doesn't leaf out as good in the spring. It's a weaker plant. Whereas the perennials, when they yellow and turn brown, there is no more storage, and getting them out actually and cutting them back is a good thing. It cleans it up and leaves it much better for winter.
Okay, Deborah, thanks a lot for the call. This one's from Bruce on Facebook. Any suggestions on how to chop up leaves to use as garden mulch if you don't have a power mower or a chipper. I tried using my manual reel mower and got nowhere.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God.
No, that's not going to work too well. No.
I would say borrow your neighbor's power mower.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's a cop-out, though, right?
No.
You know, every mower is a mulching mower if you go over it enough times.
That's true.
So
the leaf just needs to get chopped into pieces, so I know where he's coming from.
Yeah, but, you can't do it with a reel mower.
I don't think so. Not be too hard.
Yeah, a power mower is the best way, and a riding mower, of course, has a little more power.
Yeah. All right.
And a chipper if you have it, which obviously this poor guy don't.
No, he doesn't have anything.
No, a reel mower. So we're going to have to.
Yeah, the option is make a big pile of the leaves, let them settle, and then in the spring or maybe even a spring after this one, the bottom part will look pretty good.
You don't have to have a compost bin to have compost. No. You just put the stuff in a pile and nature's going to take care of it.
I mean, you could go out with scissors and just start cutting leaves, right?
Yes.
I mean, that would theoretically work. Let's take a break here. We have to fix Bob's microphone stand. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support comes from Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Local apples, pumpkins, squash, fresh meats and seafood, and Adams Grown Mums. AdamsFarms.com. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals. EastHeaven.com. Destination Williamstown, a calendar of curated events in the Northern Berkshires, Culture, College, Cows. DestinationWilliamstown.org. Unusual wedding rings and more, specializing in wedding and engagement rings and custom-made designs, open Tuesday through Saturday in downtown Pittsfield and Midtown New York by appointment. UnusualWeddingRings.com. And Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953. Sheehy Opticians.com.
Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's the gardening show, and what fun we have here in late October with Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Fred Breglia. And you at home or wherever you happen to be, 1-800-348-2551. Dan in Saratoga Springs. Dan, you're on.
Yes. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
My situation is that the very first springtime flowering of a bush, a forsythia maybe, the yellow flower.
Yep. That's not technically the first woody plant in our area to bloom, but it is one of the earlier ones, the first being the Chinese witch hazel.
Witch hazel, yeah. But I bet you mean forsythia. And
but forsythia is the most common.
And then cornelian cherry or cornus moss is second.
That's
right.
A tree. Yeah.
But the forsythia is the most common that you see, so sorry about that.
I've had a steroid type of bush, but the blossoming is becoming more abbreviated and partial.
More towards the bottom?
The entire plant. What can I do?
So I would say it needs renovation.
Renovation, absolutely. Trim out the oldest stuff as low as you can and push some new growth. And recognize that forsythia often don't bloom particularly well because the flower buds can be killed by the winter.
Exactly. So if you see, that's why I asked you if it was blooming at the bottom. Right. Because a lot of times forsythia, you'll see them in the spring, especially after the last few winters that have been kind of hard. You're going to get blooms at the bottom. And I get this call a lot at the Arboretum, but blooms at the bottom, but nothing on two-thirds of the plant, the upper two-thirds. Why? Well, the reason for that is that all, just like what Bob said, the winter injury of all the flower buds is going to basically be decimated above the snow line. But the snow insulates everything below, and therefore you get good blooming at the bottom. So if you are that, you probably have good leaf and therefore not so much of a renovation situation. But if you're getting intermittent flower and overall poor health, then definitely more of a renovation.
And shaping, taking out the bulky crisscrossing of branches. But that doesn't seem to help. It's been 2 or 3 years I've been doing that.
So what we're recommending is that, and this is something you would do in the spring, let it flower.
Yep.
And as soon as it's done flowering, or just even as it's flowering, you will cut at ground level you know, maybe up to a third of the entire plant, pull it right out of there, trying to pick the nicest, strongest stems to leave and leave intact. Some of those you may want to shorten a little bit, but other than that, you're going to leave them intact. Adding some kind of complete fertilizer would be very helpful at that time as well.
Selective cutting in the spring and fertilizing. I thank you, gentlemen.
Yep. After it blooms, that's when you want to prune it.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Lance in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Lance, you're on.
Yes, my question. Thank you for taking my call, first of all. And my question is bamboo.
Oh, yeah, the old bamboo.
It's just taken over.
Is it?
Yep.
The plant I had a landscaper tell me, he says, the only way to get rid of it is to pour 5 gallons of gas on it and let it burn.
No. Napalm also out of the question.
Yeah. Is it bamboo or Japanese knotweed?
My guess is Japanese knotweed.
Probably Japanese knotweed, which we call wild bamboo sometimes. Yep.
Okay.
Technically not a bamboo, but boy, it does look like everything bamboo is.
And right now
for.
It would be totally brown from the frost.
The frost just nailed it. Yeah.
Yep.
That's
Japanese knotweed. But how do I get rid of it next year?
Yeah.
The mowing technique that we've mentioned regularly before is really great way to get rid of it. If the ground is relatively level and you can run it over with your power mower, I would do that and do that consistently, and it will disappear.
Wear it out.
Okay, it's on a hillside, so I can't.
That's where we have it too.
Fred has said a number of times in this year on this show is that the best time to prune that is when it's just pushed out its growth, right?
Yeah, let it use stored energy. Unfortunately, that Japanese knotweed is not the – it doesn't – that's one of the exceptions to that rule. It doesn't work overly well with that. Is it better than cutting it any other time? Probably, because it's still using stored energy.
You have to repeatedly
cut
it. I've taken me 5 years
sometimes.
But
that one takes a lot more. Yes. You got to keep going after it.
So
exactly.
A couple of – you know, with heavy-duty weed whacking on the hill, if you did that once or twice, maybe if you could do it twice in the spring, that would be great. So once when it arises in you know, early May, and then again first of June, and then Fred's idea of covering the material with black plastic is another way. So by using a nice heavy grade kind of 6 mil black plastic, put that down, hold it down with some heavy material. Once you've shortened it and gotten it really stressed from the couple of mowings, then the black plastic will start to
You're basically trying to starve the thing to death in one form or another eventually. Yeah,
okay. And it's a tough one. You've got to be on
it. It's a hard one.
Persistence wins with this weed.
Lance, thanks a lot for the call. This one via email, sort of on the same topic. This is from Jackie. I'm fighting Bishop's weed.
I recently
had an entire area excavated for another project and had the weed-infested area scraped 1 inch deep and taken away from my property. I made the contractors promise not to mix it in with any topsoil they will sell in the future.
Good luck.
They thought I was nuts. Well, they missed a few feet, and it's coming back. Is there anything I can do? First of all, what is Bishop's weed?
It's ground covering type of, believe it or not, brought over for
Agapodium.
Agapodium. It was brought over for an ornamental.
It's actually something people plant on purpose.
Yep. Yeah. It was actually an ornamental for years. There's also a variegated variety.
Well, what does it look like?
It's a low,
rich green.
Yeah, compound leaf that grows to about a foot. And then has little white sort of carrot-like flowers.
That's Bishop's weed.
Yeah. Yes. And it cuts real easy, and it pulls real easy. Unfortunately, every time you pull it, it breaks off a small piece of root. And you'll never get all the pieces. So, I mean, this is one of the ones we battle at the Arboretum. It's in the garden, so you can't mow it. You can't smother it unless you lift the whole area, which is an option.
But if you can mow.
That's an easy controller with mowing.
Okay. It kills it in one season. Yep.
Okay. All right. Bishop's weed.
But otherwise, it's battle in there, hand pulling, trying to get really detailed, trying to get every little piece. Mm-hmm. When you see what comes back, go after it again. When you see what comes back, go after it again. And you wear it down, but I don't think you ever really win.
You could just give in then, right? Let it go?
Well, what else are you going to do on the weekends? Well,
it keeps us in business, too. It's job security. Yeah,
there's football. There's a lot of things to do, right? Dennis in Greenfield. Dennis, you're on. Hello, Dennis. It's line 3. We're having trouble. Dennis, are you there? I'll try it one more time. Dennis? Good heavens. Line 3 is haunted today. Joanna in South Hadley. Joanna, you're on.
Hi there, folks. I have 8 blueberry bushes, and most are about 10 years old, and one is a new one. And I can see that the new one is really thriving, and the others just really aren't growing very much. And I don't know if you have any recommendations for how to put them to bed this winter. You know, they've got red leaves, and most of the leaves are falling off. Is there any fertilizing or mulching or anything like that I should do around them? And then what kind of fertilizer and when to apply it in the spring?
Well, I guess the first thing I'd say is that soil test, because you don't know the pH for sure. And if you don't, then you're kind of guessing. And blueberries really thrive. They do really good, almost weed-like, if you get the pH right. If you don't, you struggle with blueberries. So I would recommend, if you're in New York, which I'm not sure where you are.
I'm in Western Mass.
Yes, yeah, Western Mass. South and then there's a UMass extension or something like that does that kind of soil test.
Yeah, right there. UMass, you are so close. You can walk, walk the soil.
I'd start
right
with
over.
That, because that will tell you whether or not you need an acidifying fertilizer or not. You'll know your pH. You'll know your fertility
and
levels.
They'll ask you what you're growing there as well. So they'll orient it.
And then once you know that, I would recommend, you know,
fertilizing
that.
This fall.
Yep. It would be good. Yep.
I find that my pH is a little high. It's around 6.2, which for blueberries is a little high. And I do find that I do acidify, but I find that fertilizing, making sure that they're getting that nitrogen fix annually, makes a big difference in their ability to put out some reasonable new growth. And I have plants that are at least 10 or 15 years
old.
Okay.
And when you're fertilizing, use something that's like for rhododendrons or azaleas. It's acidifying.
That's
it's got some sulfur.
It'll have sulfur in it.
Right.
All right. Joanna, thanks a lot for the call. This one dovetails with that. This is from Mariana in Hawley, Pennsylvania. Nice to hear from Pennsylvania. How would you recommend staking raspberries?
Oh, two rows running parallel about 2 feet apart. So put in posts every whatever 8 or 10 feet. Run some wire between the posts so that the raspberries are in the middle. They grow up and then they lean to the outside and hang on the wire.
All right,
that's what we do.
Yeah, I was just in Oregon and saw fields and fields of them done exactly that way.
Yeah,
terrific. Yep. All right, over to line 5. Perhaps it'll work. Faye in Kinderhook, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You're on.
I have a large bed of orange daylilies, the ones that kind of grow wild.
Okay.
And I'd like to replace it with something. The main reason is because, you know, they're pretty when they bloom, the lilies, but it's such a limited time. So I'm looking for something. By the way, it's mostly sun, a little shade, but mostly sun. Anyway, I'm looking for something that has a longer bloom time, and I'm curious whether it would be better to till or not, and if it would be better to whatever you recommend to plant in the fall or the spring.
Well, so in this case, the first question I ask is, this area is filled with this plant that comes up every year and blooms for you, and you probably don't have to do a lot of work there. Is that true?
You don't need to do much work to maintain it in that sense, correct?
I think she's...
Did we lose you, Faye? Are you there?
What I'm getting at is that the daylilies, you know, are a very low-maintenance perennial that does, in fact, do a good job. Yes, that bloom time is really about 30 days. There are many selections
re-blooming.
Of daylilies that will give you a longer bloom time. So you could start to incorporate some of them, removing some of what you have and inserting some other colors, some later blooming ones, some re-blooming ones
If she wanted all of those gone, the best thing's going to be to just dig them out.
Yes. Yeah, they dig out easy. Yeah. And most people will take them if you say, hey, freeze, daylilies.
Get rid of them.
And probably what? The classic tiger lily is my guess.
Yeah, it's a daily amaryllis.
Yeah. So you'd have no problem giving them away. You might even find someone to dig them up and dig them for free.
Okay.
So getting it all out, turning over the soil, tilling it, and then we're done.
I heard an oh dear. That must mean Dennis.
Oh, that was me.
Yeah. You're on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I heard this weird
buzz. Greenfield. You're on.
Yeah, we got cut off, and I apologize, and hi, and thank you. So, yes, I got a large bug. I was outside, and I wasn't going to call, but it's ant-like in shape. It's an inch long, and it's got it's big for an ant. It's got a overextended abdomen, like it was a queen or something.
I think it's a tiger beetle. First guess is tiger beetle without looking at it.
Sounds
like a tiger beetle.
Have a shell of any kind or wings?
It does. It's a kind of an ectoskeleton, kind of ant-like. It's almost got like little wings that are modified. It's more like the abdomen's got like just a vestige of a wing.
We need a photo.
Yeah, we'd like to see a photo of that one. I think
info at wardsnursery.com.
Okay, that's good. Send it to Greg.
Yep, and if you want, CC Fred at landisarboretum.org. I'd like to see the
Okay, so this is potentially a new devastating alien species.
Yeah. I don't think so. No? I just want to see whether or not it's a tiger beetle or something else. And
I've got two bug books here. I was just frantically trying to look them up while I was on the phone with you. So how do I contact you?
info@wardsnursery.com is the email that'll...
info@wards...
Yeah.
Yep. wardsnursery.com.
Yep. Yes. And the other one is Fred at Landis Arboretum.
Okay.
And .org.
You guys will send them to us so we can see the bug because it sounds very interesting.
We'd love to.
All right. Fair enough. Thanks, Dennis. Glad you got through. Let's go over to Keith in Northboro, Mass. Keith.
Yes. I'm calling in. My landlord this spring decided to cut down my magnolia tree.
Oh, boy.
Or her magnolia tree. And left the stump. So there's several sprouts now, and it actually started to flower again. I was wondering if there's any way I can retransplant that.
Our first question would be, is this on your property?
It is her property, but she's my cousin, so she wouldn't mind.
All right.
If I could put it somewhere else. They want to put it in a new driveway.
Moving it is not going to be real easy if it's a old tree, which it sounds like it was an older one, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to dig that guy up because the sprouts are all living on the original parent plant. Now, you probably could take cuttings off of those at the right time and root them. It'd take a little bit of work, but that would probably root pretty easily.
Bob would say dig it up right now and bring it to your house and plant it.
Yeah, you got nothing to lose at this point.
You got nothing to lose, but can you get enough root on there?
Yeah, the question is, can you get enough? Try it and see. You don't know until you try.
The sprouts are coming off the actual stump, not out of the ground, right? Or are they
coming out of the stump? Yeah,
and they did that. I mean, they did that this summer, so they're finished and they've set bud. So this is a dormant little shrub on a big stump.
Yep.
Okay.
Right? The only way it's going to work is if you can get some root.
Yep.
So it's how wide was the original trunk or trunks?
I'd say I would diameter of maybe 7 or 8 inches.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's not that bad.
So if you don't have some kind of excavating machine where you can kind of pop it out, then you would start digging a trench all the way around it and go down about 18 or 20 inches and then start undermining it, and you'll pop it right out of there.
Yep, and you'll cut through a whole bunch of structural roots, but that's part of the game. So you're going to literally cut right through a whole bunch of big roots.
Okay.
Inch or two in diameter probably on that.
All right, Keith, thanks for the call. All right, we have about less than 2 minutes left. We will blast through as many emails as we can.
All right.
Let's keep our answers very quick.
All right.
This one is from Margaret. Is this a good time to transplant a tree peony?
Yes, you could do a tree peony now. That would try to maintain some root ball where the root system
sooner,
is.
More root sooner the merrier. Rather than later.
Yes.
Yep. And the more root, the merrier.
All right. This one said, this is from Mona. We have a young American chestnut tree we want to transplant. Please tell us about soil, sun, and other requirements. That's from Mona.
Chestnut. Well, it likes full sun.
Yeah, full sun, open environment.
Yep, it's tolerant to a wide variety of soils. So soil-wise, and this time of year is good.
Do it now.
Okay, the lightning round goes on. This is from Veronica on Facebook in Saugerties. Do I need to cover my new fig tree for outside, or do I bring it in the house for the winter? 3 feet high, 2 years old now.
Bring it in the house.
Yep.
Bring it in the house. All right. This one's from Judy in Leverett, Mass. Last winter, the weight of the snow bent my rhododendron bush at a 90-degree angle, blocking the driveway a bit. Now is the first time I have to trim it. I thought I'd trim it a foot beyond the bend for now so I don't kill it. If it blooms in spring, I thought I'd cut it back to the straight trunk. Does this sound right?
She wants to, generally, you want to prune that after it blooms. So that would be more of a springtime bloomer. This time of year, if she did it already, I don't think it's going to kill it.
If it's a structural problem, it's not going to hurt it.
It's not going to hurt it.
Go ahead.
Take it back to the next major limb that's bigger and make a nice clean cut about a quarter inch off the main limb.
Yep, and if it's completely devastated the structure, you can rejuvenate rhododendrons and azaleas, which means you cut them to the ground at the right time, which is right before they actually leaf out, and you'll get a brand new shrub with good structure, no flowers that year.
Well, that was a great lightning round. All right, email addresses and website, Bob Graves, Fadigans.
That's www.fadigans.com, and that'll get to me.
All right, Bob. How about you, Greg?
At wardsnursery.com or info@wardsnursery.com.
And Fred.
Yep, it's www.landisarboretum.org, and the email is fred@landisarboretum.org.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, very much for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in. And support comes from Union College Concert Series, presenting pianist Yefim Bronfman performing works of Prokofiev and Schumann en route to his recital at Carnegie Hall Wednesday, November 11th, 7:30 p.m., unioncollegeconcerts.org. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, qfcc.com. Maybe Farm Historic Site, an 18th century farm on the banks of Mohawk River, featuring interactive food exhibit, Instagram photo exhibit, talks, nature trails, and events for children and adults, accepting reservations for basket weaving workshops, schenectadyhistorical.org. And Mango Tree Imports, Saratoga Springs, New York, announcing their new location in the Saratoga Marketplace, 454 Broadway, open 7 days a week, mangotreeimports.com. I'm losing my voice. That's it for the show. Thanks to Fred, Greg, and Bob. Thanks to Zach Molloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Deb Malik, our producer, the wonderful Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Stand by for news.